do some self-education, explore more around finance, not just what to invest in the stock market, which is typical. I think it's really encouraging folks to get that self-education and explore a little bit further so they can see what type of investor they are, right, in terms of financial. And they'll have to explore that, right, because it can be done a different way, a lot of different ways.
Welcome to the Wealth Matters Podcast, where investors come together to better understand how to build passive cash flow and create generational wealth without all the confusing mumbo-jumbo. Here's your host and co-author of Amazon number one bestseller, Alpesh Pamar.
Welcome to Wealth Matters Podcast. I have Tom Suvansri on the podcast. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So Tom holds an MBA in finance from Penn State University. And after working in the pharmaceutical industry for 15 years, he founded Premier Trust Advisors. Tom teaches his clients how banks, insurance firms, and brokerage houses make money and how to use those same strategies to build personal wealth with less risk. So I'm looking forward to the episode because we want to talk about college education. My kids are still young, but I've already, started, digging deep into how I'm going to finance their college education. Because even though I always talk about real estate, and whenever, people listen about real estate, they hear that, college is, no one should go to college. If you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki says that college is a joke. But, truth be told, if I didn't go to college, I won't be here. I did my bachelor's in engineering, master's in computer science, and that's why I'm here. So, of course, I want my kids to get educated and then they can decide what they want to do, right? So I still think college is relevant and it's important. So looking forward to the episode. So Tom, tell us something interesting, funny, weird about yourself.
Yeah, it's funny. I love the question to start off because I had a recent conversation with my mother and we're talking about childhood. And she reminded me back when I was probably around 4 or 5 years old. I vaguely remember this, but we had an astrologer, a famous astrologer from India, come to our house.
Now I believe the story.
Yeah, and they read our palms and everyone in the house, very famous. And my mother was just in love with this. And so they did a report out on everything. And years later, I finally got the details of some of the things that he predicted. And one of the things he predicted was, you're going to be wealthy. Your son's going to be wealthy. I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's going to be wealthy. And it just struck me when I was told that, I almost feel like it became me. It's something that was now in part of me as a child and something that stuck with me and has helped propel me in my life. It wealthy in more than just money, but in life. And I think it was just a funny thing to chat with my mom about. And I said, wow, you almost set me on my course by doing it. But it was just a fun conversation.
That's funny. And you're right. Astrology is such a big deal in India. And I have never, mentioned this story, but my astrologer, he wrote it down. There is an entire book on it, like 10 pages or so. And one of the things he had said is the same thing, that your son is going to travel and live in some other part of the world. He's not going to. And this was when I was, I think, 6 months old.
So wow.
I don't know how he figured that out. I always thought it's a joke. Somehow he figured that out. And he even said that he's going to have some kind of technical degree. So I became an engineer.
It's incredible.
Yeah, this is 40 years ago, 40. That's crazy. But
it's crazy. No, but that is
funny. And definitely, I believe you.
So I thank them for bringing him into the house. He helped me out quite a bit.
So do you invest in real estate?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My background, just like a lot of people, learning about finance, it really didn't include real estate. And it was the typical approach, you know, the billionaire next door sort of mindset. And I, you know, over a course of time, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners too come across and recognize, there are other ways to build wealth. And I started learning about it. It took me a couple of tries to sink in. I had to read Rich Dad Poor Dad a few times to say, where has this been? And it took me a little while to take some action on it. But yeah, I started around like 7 years ago, and I really immersed myself learning about it and sort of realizing how powerful it can be. And so many ways to use it and invest in, you know, whether you own it or, you know, act as a banker. There's just such a variety. And it just, to me, I've now grown and loved it and found out what I like and don't like about it. What I do definitely like about it is there's so many ways to win financially with it. To me, that's the most appealing part. And, you know, you find out what's worked for you. So I do mostly single families, duplexes, I own them. And then I sort of migrated into private lending to local investors, as well as partaking in like syndications. I know you talk a lot about that. So just a variety of a grab bag of types, but I certainly believe real estate has a massive sort of benefit for me. And I think it will always be there.
And I'm glad that you mentioned, I keep mentioning that on the show as well. But as you said, real estate, there are so many ways to invest. When we mentioned real estate to someone who is a newbie or who does not invest, they're like, oh yeah, you are a realtor or you just buy a property.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, there are so many ways. As you said, from single family to small to large apartment buildings. We just bought a mobile home park for my group in August. So mobile home park, I have invested in self storage. One of my friend does laundromat and parking spots.
Oh, wow.
And as you mentioned, private money lending, if you don't want to do anything, you can use your IRA or 401k and just do private money lending, right? 10, 12% with the least amount of risk involved. And so there are so many ways, as you mentioned, and I keep telling people. And then, of course, syndication, where you can be as passive as you want to be, right? So thank you for bringing that up. So another, I want to talk about the education. So what have you learned as to how families and investors can best finance things in their lives, such as education?
Yeah, because this goes back to, you know, there's so much focus in the financial space on investing. And it we need to invest and grow our wealth. Right. There's no doubt about that. But that's the sexier part of finance. What is probably less sexy is financing and saving money, right? And using our own wealth in certain ways. And it doesn't get as much play, but I think the reality is there's so much value in understanding how to best use your resources, right? Not even where you're investing, but how you actually use it in finance. Because the biggest need I think we all have in our lives is to finance things, whether it's our investments or things like education. And so we take a clue from what the wealthy people do. They leverage resources to their benefit to build their wealth. And that's exactly the type of thing that really can help for a lot of people who are thinking about funding and things like education or even cars or anything. How do you do it so you can leverage resources instead of just using your own? And that's a sort of mindset shift that a lot of people haven't really come across. Because if you think about it, you know, there's two ways most people know how to finance something. They either take debt on, right? They take debt and they pay interest back on it. And unfortunately, we live in a world of high indebtedness.
Oh, people. Yes.
It's just a massive
cheap
issue.
Money.
Right. You're, you know, and so versus being in debt is different than having debt, right? You understand this from the real estate world. And so the other side of it is some people like to save, right? You save money is a good approach, and you save and save and save. And then when you need to spend it, you almost dump the bucket. You imagine you have a lot of money in the bucket and you just dump it over and hand it off to a car dealership or a college institution. What gets missed is that now that money can never earn for you again. Basically, you hand that off. You may gotten a good start, but now it's no longer earning for you. And so thinking long-term about this thing, then there's potentially a third way is how do you maintain and continue to allow your assets to continue to grow over long periods of time, which we know basic math tells you compound interest works.
Right.
But we are often taught to stop that and cut it short. Why don't you allow your assets to grow and leverage them to use someone else's money, potentially finance things in your life, whether it be investments or things like education, while your money gets to grow and compound for massive amounts of years. And that's sort of just a different approach that I think people can take, control more of their wealth and allow it to really, you know, accumulate and grow over long periods of time.
That's great. Hey, I want to talk to you about the cost of tuition. So have you looked into, and because we want to talk about education, what is the average cost of tuition right now? And what do you see after like 10 years?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing. I think when you look at it, and it's back in the early 2000s, I mean, you had massive inflation with education. It's come down quite a bit in the past 5 or so years, looking at it historically, but it's still significant. If you just look at tuition itself for private institutions, you're talking $35,000 on average. That's just for tuition.
Right.
And then out of state, state universities, it's maybe 20. And then for your in-state, maybe in around 10. So that's on average when you look at it. But reality is it's just like anything else. Universities and colleges, big business. And yeah. So you have the idea of economics come into play. So when you look at the types of universities, because they're not all the same, as we know.
Right.
Imagine the top universities, the top, say, 100 that are elite colleges, Ivy Leagues, that could be up in the range of $60,000 to $70,000. Well, for them, price pressures are not as high because they have so much demand, right? They have so much demand, and the one percenters can still afford it, right? Yeah. And they're willing to pay it because they want to do that for their families. So they have less price pressure going forward, right? They're going to still probably see growth. And so we're probably going to be talking here, hopefully, in years from now, maybe talking $100,000,
right,
for these top universities. And then then when you're in the middle, where there's probably 300 colleges, the second tier, have some pressure, but, you know, they may have to provide some more assistance to people, you know, paying for college. So they'll have a little bit price pressure, but they still can inflate a little bit probably down the road here because they still provide value. You might be able to work, if you understand the system, work it to be able to get more money from them, if your student is attractive to them. But really what we're going to see is probably down in the book of the others, so maybe 70% of the other universities, it's going to be a lot of price pressure because they have people now seeing alternative ways to maybe the school, right? Community colleges, things of that nature,
right,
where you can shrink the cost, you're going to have a lot of price pressure. And you might see that actually decline over time.
Yeah, because, let's hope so.
Yeah, they have a lot of seats that are going empty.
Okay.
So it's just a law of supply and demand. And, you know, so that's how it sort of differentiates. So it's hard to say that it's one direction, but depending on which types of schools you're going into, it's going to be a different dynamic. And I think of it just like our own personal economies. You can call CPI going at 2%, but all have our own personal inflation of
right,
things that we consume that drives it. And for education, it's all the same, right?
Yeah.
You can have differences.
No, and I think it makes sense now that I'm thinking, especially COVID has changed a lot of, you know, perspectives too, right? So there'll be remote learning as well. Could be one of the option, and that could bring down the price too.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, no. And then hopefully more entrepreneurs go into it potentially, right? And you might see it. And, you know, full well, just as well as I do, I heard this, I think it's a Jim Rohn quote, says formal education will create a living for you, but self-education will create you a fortune.
Right.
And, you know, some people start to realize that.
Yep. So what is the biggest cost that may go undetected by most people and advisors?
You know, I think this is and you talk a lot about tax, right? I know it's one of those things that And this is a good example of things like this that, you know, we can always focus, there's a lot of focus on gross returns, right? Yeah. And and such. But really, we all know it all matters what you to keep net. You know, what are the costs associated? So like when I see, when I'm dealing with clients and I see where, yeah, they'll tout all these returns, but I said, what did it take to get that? You know, what are things they're losing, like taxes or interest, extra interest payments that you're making or insurance premiums that you're overpaying that you may never use in your lifetime, and the massive amount of fees that are going into a lot of accounts. What I kind of envision, and I try to say to my clients, think of a bucket with a whole bunch of holes in it. That bucket is leaking money all over the place from all these different areas, and for certain people, some are larger than others. And so one of the things we do is to help them plug them up, because what it does, it prevents the biggest cost that I see overall is that opportunity cost, right? Because all the dollars that you lose in all these different areas can never be saved and earned for you forever.
Right.
That amount could be massive for people, and it's just invisible, right? Just like sometimes inflation can be invisible to people, but it's eroding wealth dramatically for some people. And so we find ways to save more and plug up those holes, allows them to avoid the not only the loss today, able to allows them to invest and save more for the future for themselves and their family. So opportunity cost is just something that isn't really talked about as much, but it can be huge.
That's huge. That's very important. And I always still, you know, Tom Wheelwright's quote, he's the CPA of Robert Kiyosaki.
Yeah.
He says, I don't care how much I make. I only care about how much I keep.
It's
absolutely. After I pay Uncle Sam, that's, you know, that's what matters.
And as it relates to education, though, Alpesh, yep. The other thing I want to allude to, I mean, this is where, again, back to the fees, like we'll talk about tuition. You got room and board and fees come to school. Yep. I mean, these could add up. And it could create another 10,000-15,000 a year. And then, which we'll probably hopefully get into a little bit later, is that most people are not graduating in 4 years. Right? You plan for it. You plan for it, but people are taking 6 years. Yeah. Well, that's an extra 2 years of tuition, board, all that stuff that people are not naturally factoring in. So those are really big costs that maybe just are not thought of too deeply.
So let's talk about some of the typical ways families are advised to save for college and what are the pros and cons, right? Because I always keep hearing about 529 plans and I never did it because the more I researched, but of course, you know, I think you will have a lot of different ways which, you know, we have been recommended to save for college. And can you take us through their pros and cons?
Yeah, I mean, the basic, to your point, the 529, there's, and even before there's, there's a few, and some of them are most of them are government sort of created, right? So you got to always have to follow a lot of the regulations and rules around them. So
it's like 401k, which is, I feel like a scam.
it's just like that you create rules, like rules are creating like rules on top of rules. It can be very controlling. So one of the basic ones are, you have like an education savings account, right? There, it's kind of a light version of a 529. These are good in the sense that they're kind of tax shielded. You can invest in a whole bunch of different areas, but you only could put $2,000 a year in them.
Right.
So if you're saving for, you know, like we just talked about the sizable expense of college, you're not nearly going to get close to it. And there are income limits to it. Like if you make too much money, you can't even contribute to this.
No.
Right. So it has restrictions that comes with all those sorts of fun things around. If you don't use it for education, it, you know, you have these penalties and on the earnings, you get taxed on it. So it just, again, it's not an awful place, but again, it's very segmented into one job to save for college. If your child decides to do something else, you're going to get penalized for it. And it has to be used by age 30. So, you know, again, a lot of restrictions to it. Part is that it does grow tax-free. And then if you use it for college, you won't pay tax on that. But again, back to the concept of your money finally starts growing at 9%. Let's say it does that. Well, now it stops growing 9% forever. So it's just another big opportunity cost. The thing you just mentioned, the 529, is kind of the larger version. Most people are familiar with it because there are no income restrictions for it. So you can contribute large sums of money to it, which is a really good pro to it. There's no restrictions from an income level. However, they do, you can find ones where there's state deductions to them, right, depending on which ones you invest in and where you are. So there is potential benefits from that perspective. But it does have the limitations, again, down the road, that it has to be used for education. Right. And there's an expansion of that and use of it. So it has become a little more flexible. However, it still goes with that same fundamental issue, is that it has to be used for a certain thing. And then if for some reason you don't use it, then you get penalized for it. And you can't even roll it into an IRA or anything like that. It has to be used for that purpose. If you don't, then you're going to get hit. So it's a simple way for folks to do it. But they're, long run, it's actually be very hurtful from your wealth building. And then there's things like, have you heard them, like UGMA and UGMA? They love these sort of acronyms. Like you can set up little trust for your children, right? They're kind of a gift to minors act and things of that. So you can create them. They're great part is they're a little more flexible in terms of what you can use them for, but they're irrevocable trusts. So you do it, you can't reverse it. And so you can invest in more and control it, but then when the child becomes of age, basically it's theirs and they can choose to use it for whatever they want. No stipulation, you have to use it for education. So it's a good and bad thing because then they have flexibility to use it, but they can take it and go to Hawaii if they really wanted to. It's their money now. So it's not a bad place, but just recognize that it's not, you're going to have to give it to them. It's not yours anymore after they become of age. And there's certain amount of restrictions on how much you can put in there, a gift law tax perspective. So those are the typical approaches, and some of the other ones maybe using home equity and right. Potentially, or just saving, and just lopping off some of your income every year, right? Those are the ways. And obviously the biggest thing what everyone's doing is taking loans, right? Because this is where it gets into, you have all these types of loans, subsidized, unsubsidized, it can get very complicated, but the fact of the matter is they're loans. And who's supporting all these loans? Well, vast majority is U.S. government. And, biggest asset, I saw it the other day, the biggest asset our government has on their books, on their balance sheet, are student loans. That makes up over 50% of the assets on their balance sheet. Massive amount. So you just have to be careful when we take loans out, and that's a good investment, because then, like we're seeing, unfortunately now, a lot of the students that maybe didn't even finish college are now strapped with loans they can't get rid of. And they become a very detrimental thing as they're trying to build wealth and progress in their lives. So it's almost as if equated to when back in the day when you're getting out loans for mortgages back in the housing crisis, that we're getting loans that should never have gotten them.
Right.
And then they get strapped with them and it causes chaos. Unfortunately, we're seeing this with our children. Who are unfortunately not always equipped to manage it and are really struggling now with it. So those are the typical ways that, obviously we see around funding college.
So let's talk about some alternative ways to save and invest for college then.
Yeah. No, and it kind of goes back to kind of how we started this a little bit is owning assets is big. And you go back to the simple concepts you talk about and you read about in Rich Dad Poor Dad is controlling assets and owning assets. Right. And so for me, when I think about this, even back to real estate, what are assets you can own that will continue to grow, create cash flow, and how could they be used to fund college? Take the example of imagine your child going to a college and you can buy a fourplex in that town,
right?
Where your son could actually live, son or daughter could live in it and have three tenants, collect rent, be property manager.
The mortgage.
Yeah, and help pay the mortgage and the income. And so, and then you leave not just giving money to the school, but you're leaving with an asset that hopefully is appreciated and you've paid down some of the debt and done it in a very tax efficient way. And so it's just taking a slightly different lens to say, you know, how do we create assets in different ways to help fund the things that we want in our lives, like education or vacations, whatever it is, using that sort of general philosophy to do that. And so whether it's rental properties or some of the things we talked about in real estate or business, you know, obviously we talk about, we've had guests on your show using life insurance as an asset to leverage, right? Right. And you leverage that asset without actually using it. Right. And it allows that thing to grow. So it could be, as we know, there's so many ways to do it, but just taking that philosophy on the things that you like to invest in terms of your assets, allow those things to mature, grow, and leverage them where you can. Right. There are a lot of ways to do it. Those are just some examples to give you a flavor of what could be done.
That's awesome. So what do most misunderstand about obtaining financial aid?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because everyone talks about financial aid, and the unfortunate reality is for most people who make even a moderate income, we're not talking, you know, in the six figures, even $50,000, it's going to be tough to get what we consider financial aid, like grant money. Money that you don't have to pay back. What is always a misunderstanding is that a lot of the financial aid is in the form of loans, right? Some of them might be subsidized, but still loans. That's the bulk of what people are using to fund college. And so a lot of the misunderstanding is there's a whole host of financial aid money sitting there. And I've talked to some college consultants and they said, this is just really not true, right? In terms of free money. Right, for most people. And most people who have decent incomes, and it's going to be difficult to get that free money just from aid. So it really pushes us to think about broader, well, how can we get aid from the schools or grant money or scholarship money by positioning our children in a way that's very attractive to them? Because it's not just, you're not going to give you money just because they like you. They really have to like you. Right, as a student, right, and thinking about it from that perspective.
Right, no, this is awesome. So I think we covered everything on the college education. Let's take a quick break, and after the break, I'll go through my usual questions.
That's great.
You're listening to the Wealth Matters Podcast.
The Wealth Matters Podcast.
For more info about what we do, check us out at wealthmatters.com. It's wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, matters, M-A-T-R-S.com.
Welcome back to Wealth Matters Podcast. I was chatting with Tom about how to fund your college without breaking the bank. Tom, are you ready for five rounds?
Let's go.
Okay. Would you be changing any business or investment strategy after coronavirus?
Yeah, you know, this coronavirus has been so impactful to so many people, and it's really highlighted to me to the importance of helping people ensure they have the right liquidity and emergency money out there. And really, it's going to be an area that, you know, for my practice to really help people, business owners, individuals too, to find that optimal area of having liquidity available to them in different shapes and sizes. And there's a lot of creative ways to do it. It's also highlighted a second area that we always knew there was an issue, but now with the increased debt the government's taking on, it's just inevitable. How do we, taxes are going to be part of our lives going forward. And so how do we bring more tax awareness to people so they can prepare adequately on the road so they can keep more of their wealth, themselves and their family. So that's really going to be a good shift for me to help people at least recognize the impact of how this is going to themselves and what are some strategies and ways to address it.
Okay. Favorite real estate or finance or, you know, maybe personal development book?
Yeah, you know, it's a book I reread more recently, and especially given these sort of days. It's called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
And I got to read that book. Someone just recommended me last week. I have not read it.
Oh, it's a great book, and I think you'll love it. You know, it's certainly focused on the idea of stoicism and that we're always going to run into obstacles, and it's supposed to be that way so we can grow and become, you know, our better version of ourselves. And so accepting that and actually running towards it. And so it's a really powerful book from a personal development and business. And I go back to it frequently just to sort of refresh and ensure that I have the right mindset when I'm dealing with things in life.
Okay. And I love Ryan Holiday. So I got to check out that book for sure.
Yeah.
Any tool or website you recommend, you cannot live without?
You know, it's something I started earlier this year. It's more of an actual, not digital tool. It's just a tool to help prioritization. You know, I started using a little bit more journaling. I was trying to create some more productivity in my life. And so now I've gotten to a habit of every week identifying the three key priorities that I need to get done that week. And because I was trying to take too much on. And so I started journaling and started writing this down, because I've read that if you have more than three priorities, you don't have any priorities. And so sticking to those, the things that are important in my life, my business, my wealth, health, and putting them down and seeing how I'm doing has really helped me stay focused and balanced in all my life. So it's been a very invaluable tool to help me sort of stay on track and do the things that matter most to me.
That's the biggest problem every entrepreneur faces. And I started doing journaling even this year as well. I bought the Miracle Morning Journal.
I've
been following Miracle Morning for over a year, but I never did the journaling. And I had the same issue because I was taking on so much, and then I start procrastinating. I'm like, okay, what do I need to finish? So of course I reread the Miracle Morning, then read the one thing, and I was like, okay, it's about time I got to start journaling. So I highly recommend everyone, especially for entrepreneurs like us who wear multiple hats throughout the day.
And
as you said, you got to focus on not just building wealth, it's your health, the family health. When I say family health, is your, you know, life. So journaling does help for sure. So any advice for beginner investors?
Yeah, and this is where you and I know this full well, that a lot of the financial things that you have on your show and broadly are not really taught anywhere in school. Right. And so this is where it's sharing and encouraging people to do some self-education, explore more around finance, not just to invest in the stock market, which is typical. I think it's really encouraging folks to get that self-education and explore a little bit further so they can see what type of investor they are, right, in terms of financial. And they'll have to explore that, right, because it can be done a lot of different ways. And so encouraging that and giving them exposure to other types of financial advice. And what I often talk about with folks is before you get too far into investing is to ensure you have a strong foundational base below you. And a lot of it is centered around, I talk about defense, right? The protections about you and you as an asset to be able to produce, protect yourself, from you and your family, allows you to play offense and invest. Too quickly, people are too quick to go invest. They're completely exposed, and they're at one little bad hiccup will cause financial failure for themselves and their families. And so setting that foundation is so key that allows them to propel and invest. I think they can get too quick into that.
Hey, thank you for sharing that advice. How do you give back?
Yeah, certainly I donate to causes that are important to us. We're, you know, my wife's an educator, so education is big for us. Big animal lovers, so we have a lot of organizations. Our dog's a rescue, so we donate a lot and get involved with that. And more recently, I joined a board of a nonprofit called 901 Education, in which the teachers started this, and they're trying to infuse more creativity and like design thinking sort of concepts into underprivileged schools, give them sort of the power and resources to actually be creative, to solve problems in their community. And to me, it's just an amazing thing. I think I got more out of it than they did getting involved with these things, because you could see when you give people it's a glimmer of confidence and support, they can become so much bigger than they ever imagined. And it's amazing to see that kind of growth in people and kids. And that's something that's a big passion of mine.
That's great. How can my listeners reach out to you?
Certainly, you can come to my website, Premier Trust Advisors. I have a YouTube channel as well. I do a lot of videos on key different topics around wealth building. Those are two big areas. And certainly you can reach out to me through my email at Tom Savantri. I'm at PremierTrustAdvisors.com.
Okay, awesome. I'll put those in the show notes. Thank you so much, Tom.
Great. It was so nice talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Wealth Matters podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes so others can enjoy the show too. Have a great week and happy investing.